Is Dave Flannery on the line?
Yeah, Mike, how are you?
Hey, Dave, how you doing?
Sorry, I'm late. I got the times mixed up.
That's okay. I'm glad you got my email. Thanks for joining us.
No problem at all.
We've got Dave Flannery on the line, and as far as I know, right now, he is the world's number one HMA consultant. Correct me if I'm wrong, Dave. Currently, he's working with either 16 or 17 clients, and he has a waiting list through a very effective joint venture endorsement that he used that's got 16 additional people on his waiting list, and he's booked up all the way through the year. And Dave's got some questions for Sam that he sent to me. Number one, like Sam, I deal on a handshake basis. Has he ever had a client renege on his part of the deal? And if so, what do you do about it?
As I said earlier, before Dave joined us, I've had two. And after the completion or partial completion of module number one, if I don't have my check, because it takes about a month to implement a module, I walk. I try to give them a chance to get it through their accounting system, which sometimes is a little bit of a barrier. But if I don't have my check by the end of the fourth week, then I know I'm not going to get it, and they're just playing me along, and I just walk.
Do you not ask for the check straight up before you even start your projects?
Yes, I do. As I said earlier, I present an invoice to the decision maker upon arrival, begin module number one, and have given them previously my business information so they can set me up on AP in their accounting system. It still might take a day for them to get a check cut, and that's okay. I'll wait that or the next meeting that I go back to, which is usually the next week. I don't mind that portion of it getting started, but if they haven't given it to me in a timely manner, then I just laid on the line. I don't think they're going to do it, so therefore I don't want to waste my time with you.
Exactly. Have you ever had any legal problems where the client says, well, this is not what I expected you to do, or this is not what you said that you would do, something in that general area?
No, because I've always made it, except in one case where the client refused to do what I told her, and therefore she knew that if she brought litigation, it would be costly to her. So no, I've had no trouble there.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Dave, you're in the middle of a lot of clients, and these questions, certainly some of these may be a concern.
Like I said, in all these teleconferences I've been involved, I've been very lucky from the outset, but I always kind of think further down the line. I like to be ready for something before it happens, and I'm sure that down the line something like that is going to happen to me, and I just want to have some sort of inkling of what other people have done.
David, I don't know whether you've looked into it. I looked into it and decided not to do it, but there is errors and omissions insurance you could take.
Oh, yeah. I've got business insurance and things like that. Like, I have a one-page operating contract agreement that I have the option of using, but I haven't had the need to use it yet. I'm just looking at it from a devil's advocate point of view at the moment. Things going so well for me at the moment that, and I said it to Michael a number of times, I'm waiting for the world to come crashing down around my head.
Dave, do you spell out in your agreement pretty much what you're going to do?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not a big agreement. It runs for about a page and a half, and it's absolutely no legal language whatsoever. I wrote it. I took it to my solicitor, and I said, if it comes to it, is this legally binding? He said, yes, and that's it. Because the last thing I want to do is go in and throw a 35-page contract full of legal crap down in front of a client. That's just going to scare them away.
Does it tell you, like, on the USP that you're going to hold a meeting with them?
I take them right through that during the op analysis. I spell it clearly out, and I tie it down. If they have any questions, we don't move on to something else until that question is tied down, until that question is fully understood.
Because I will get that out from time to time in my relationship with the client and review it with them. That heads off a lot of stuff.
Yes, it does. Like I said, I'm very big on education to clients as to what you're doing, what benefits they expect, and what they should expect from you, and what I expect from them as a client. And the more I kind of talk about that to them,
the more you'll avoid later.
Exactly.
That's
exactly.
Right.
And if it does come to a situation where something might have happened or they mightn't have lived up to their part of the bargain, I mightn't have lived up my part of the bargain, if I've kept a good relationship throughout the consultation, it makes it a lot easier at the end then to say, well, look, it didn't work out or whatever, it comes to some arrangement. I mean, a situation there where I let two of my clients go during project one, step two, the customer survey, where I came up against massive anti-USPs. So what I did was I went to them, I explained exactly what the situation was, but rather than let them go to kind of keep a goodwill situation between us, what I did was I continued with the customer survey, gave them a report on their anti-USPs, some ways to get around it, and just gave them their money back.
Good, good.
So the first thing they're going to going to do is, if they overcome their problems that they're having operation-wise or whatever it might have been, and they do decide, well, listen, yeah, we want to start growing and we've got all these problems fixed, they're going to come to me.
Dave, I hope you don't mind me saying this, but Dave is really kicking some butt. And I say that in a literal term because I had just learned that Dave was an undefeated European kickboxing champion between 1990 and 2003. So when you wonder where this drive comes from, certainly being a champion in kickboxing, I guess, rolled over into your consulting business, huh?
Yeah. A lot of my family say I have a problem. Once I get focused on something, I like to be the best at what I do.
What do, Dave? You threaten your prospects if they don't become a client?
Just bring in my mafia friends.
I have a question. I haven't even gotten through all the material yet. I've gotten quite a bit through, but there's just some local businesses I've approached, and they're not really good prospects. They're just small mom-and-pops, things like that. But you mentioned having a home bakery company, and some of the companies you mentioned in your list didn't seem to be real strong candidates because they didn't seem to be the type of company that would generate enough revenue. And the other issue I'm having is people just seem so damn busy just trying to get in front of people is a big obstacle for me right now.
Okay. The first part, tell me what you think the ideal company is.
Well, it's just Richard's criteria of a company that has $500,000 to $5 million in sales. I'm wondering how a small bake shop or something could have that kind of revenue.
Yeah. The question was on the last teleconference. Something like, how can they afford to pay me my fee? And like I said, I don't negotiate on my fee. That's my value in the marketplace. I don't negotiate that. If they're not willing to pay that, well, then they don't get me. But the thing is, you have to look at it from your point of view. What value can you bring to that client? Now, let's say that client pays whoever might be $20,000 or whatever it is. That is only expensive if you don't bring in more than $20,000.
Right.
If you bring in $40,000, that's value to the client.
For more interviews like this, please go to hardtofindseminars.com.
So you have to look at it from what you can bring to the client, and that's what you have to educate your client towards, because when you go in and you give your presentation or whatever it might be, all they're worried about as you talk to them at the start is how much you're going to cost them. So what you have to do is you have to turn it on its head and educate them to the fact that if you give me $20,000 or whatever your fee may be, I can bring in X amount of money for that investment.
It's just that if they buy all that and they say, yes, I see that, however, I just plain don't have the money.
Okay, well, then if you don't have the money, then they don't have the money.
Okay, yeah, because the one I'm talking to is a coffee shop and bakery.
Okay, well, how much in sales do they do?
They're doing like $18,000 a month or something.
Why don't you do a contingency with them?
I'm actually thinking I'm going to be able to close with her. I'm thinking about getting her to pay me, like, say, $500 in cash and then doing money in trade. I'm figuring I can use the coffee shop after hours to do seminars. I can get a lot of coffee and a lot of gift certificates. As collateral trading and so on. And at the same time, I'm driving clients to her.
What I would do with that client, if she was a client of mine, is I would say, okay, I can help you. You're having a tough cash flow problem. Give me a once-off payment of $500. And for every new profit that I bring in, you have to figure out and kind of analyze to see what her growth is, her yearly growth. You get it from the P&L year on year. And let's say before you come in, she's growing, let's say, 2%. You give her that 2% in sales terms, and everything after that then is what you bring into the business. It's new profit.
Right.
So you say, give me $500 as a retainer for the year, and 25% of all the new profit that I bring into you. What that does is, that gives you something to kind of work with, and it doesn't impede her cash flow.
You're saying just $500 on payment or per step? I was talking about per step. Or whatever she can afford.
You have to be flexible. See, I don't know what your marketplace is like. If your marketplace is in a situation where it's all small businesses and they don't have the cash flow to pay you step by step what you need, I mean, paying you $500 per step, I don't think that would be enough for you.
She's kind of a friend of mine. There's another opportunity I'm seeing is she doesn't have a website. I do web stuff. Without a huge amount of effort on my part, I could set up a website, and part of my plan was to take a percentage of her sales over the web because that's totally a new thing. So that's something that would be easy to track. So that's another thing I thought of.
Dave, remember I had sent you a question from Richard Emmons, and it had to do with the opportunity analysis. I think it was a great question. I'm going to read it again, and I'd like Sam and Richard to comment on any ideas about this, and Dave, yourself, because the question was specifically for Dave. Michael, I'd like to learn how Dave is able to get through the opportunity analysis in 1.5 hours or so. I normally take longer than that, 2 hours even. I'd also like to know how he handles a business with several divisions. Does he focus on one and leave the rest for later? How does he determine which one to focus on? Does he ask them, if you had to pick one of your businesses to grow, which one would it be? I suppose the trick is to avoid the startup and trouble businesses and zero in on the one with the most hidden marketing assets. So I guess this has come up even with me. Sam first, and then Richard second, and then Dave. How would you handle when you go into a business and they've clearly got multiple divisions and any one of the projects could fit each one of those divisions? How do you handle that, and how do you structure your fees according to that? What do you do, Sam?
Well, I've had that situation, and it depends upon what the CEO wants done. He may be doing well in one division and not need to grow his business anymore, and the other division may be in trouble and he needs help there. So in that particular case, I would focus on the division that needs the help. But one past client I just finished with had two operating divisions that both needed help. And so I took on both divisions, treated them as two separate companies, billed them as two separate entities, and although I was getting a check from each division, and they were both reporting to the same CEO, I handled them as two separate companies.
And what about the question as far as an opportunity analysis? How do you control the opportunity analysis? Do you try and control it and put a time limit on it, or do you let them go on? You know, a lot of the people you talk to could really go off on tangents. How do you specifically control your opportunity analysis, and how long will you let it go on?
Well, first of all, my initial meeting with a client goes no more than 1 hour. And the first portion of the 1 hour is a presentation of the system, a brief introduction of myself, and I have curtailed the opportunity analysis down to the bare bones, where I'm focusing on their growth targets, their difficulties as the CEO sees it. I don't need all the opportunity analysis data to be able to make a presentation back to them. I get the opportunity information in module number one during the surveys. So I don't take the time to go into the depth of the opportunity analysis on the first meeting. It just kills the presentation if I go over an hour.
Okay, so give me an idea. We've got the opportunity analysis that Richard provided, and obviously we're covering the USP, integrating the USP, alliances, database. Are you skipping some of that or lightly going over it? How many questions are you asking your potential client to get enough to come back and make a presentation that's going to get them to say yes?
No more than four. What is your definition of your company? What markets are you trying to attack? What has been roughly your annual sales volume? What is your sales growth you're trying to achieve? And then I'll throw in, I'm going to assume you're operating at a 20% gross margin. Am I right or wrong? And from the growth figures times the gross profit margin, what the bottom line, gross profit, not bottom line, it is in effect bottom line since your fees are not ongoing. So I know what I can contribute in terms of profit to them, and therefore that sets my fee. And I know from the growth that they're trying to achieve, from my experience, how many modules it's going to take.
Do you not had to take time to tell them how you're going to do that?
Absolutely, I do. The growth matrix that is in your initial presentation where you get more prospects, you increase the conversion ratio, and increase the value, that's part of the initial presentation. But I also explain very briefly what all the seven modules consist of. But I leave them with a DVD of uncovering your hidden marketing assets so that when they're fuzzy-headed about these seven modules, they go right back to it. So I really think the time is of the essence. If they want to talk more than an hour, certainly I'm going to talk to them. But I commit to an hour, and I do my best to stay within an hour.
All right, Richard, how about you? Yeah. And obviously there's multiple ways to do this. What's your style?
Yeah, if I were a consultant right now in the HMA situation, I'm finding that you could use the opportunity analysis just for the core four. Get through the first four modules, and then start the relationship and come back and discuss the others. So that would cut your opportunity analysis in half. That's one idea for this guy. The other is what Sam's doing is the opportunity analysis is really only a guide to help the client see the money. If you can help the client see the money another way, that's okay. So it's just a way, and Sam's done it by having a brief introduction in the beginning and leaving the DVD behind. But in the end, the client still has to see the $100,000 increase that Sam says he can give him. If he doesn't see Sam able to do that, he's not going to buy off on the deal. So use the analysis as a tool, manipulate it yourself, but the purpose of it is to help the client see the money. If you can shorten it, then shorten it. And I'm just suggesting one way to look at shortening that is just go to the core four, the 1 through 4 step, and start there.
All right. And Dave, how do you handle your opportunity analysis?
Much the same way. To kind of go back to the first part of the question about how to handle the company, I would probably go much the same way as Sam. I would treat it as three different companies. If they had branches that all needed help, I would treat them as three different companies and go in as three different companies. My opportunity analysis, like I said before, I'm all about educating the client. I don't work with proposals because, like I said, if somebody asks for a proposal, that means they have questions. And if they have questions, that means I haven't educated them, which means I haven't done my job. An hour and a half is as much time as I have spent so far doing an app analysis. But like I said, I use it as a tool to kind of, like Richard said, show how I can bring in money, but also bring out questions from the client that would reinforce their education of the system. If it took 2 hours to do an app analysis for me with a client, I would take 2 hours because I would want to tie down every question before moving on, because I close the deal at the end of the opportunity analysis. I don't come back with a separate proposal. So I am opening and closing in that hour and a half. So I answer every question, I tie down every question on each project as I go along, and I don't move from a project until every question that the client can think of has been answered to their satisfaction. So when it comes to the last project, and I say, can you see where the money's coming from? Is there anything you don't understand? And I say, well, what do you think the next step should be? They're going to say to me, well, Dave, I think the next step should be to get you in. Even though it's taken me an hour and a half so far, I myself wouldn't like to put a time limit on it. Of course, don't let the client go off on a tangent. The consultant has to control the situation. But I wouldn't limit the customer, my client, asking me any question that he deems necessary to be answered for him to feel like he understands what's going on.
The important thing to understand, and in all of these different styles, which is great, you won't close unless Dave's point is dead on, you've answered every question, and number two, you've shown them the money. And sometimes, and Dave's probably had it, Sam's probably had it, I've had it, you can close in 15 minutes because they see the money.
There's one or two that you haven't even gone through project one, and they don't even bother going on to project two, project three. They don't bother because they can see it.
That's right.
They really don't bother.
And so don't oversell.
Don't oversell.
That's right.
And another thing, there was a question I remember being asked on one of the transcripts I was reading about doing the full op analysis. Do you do the full opportunity analysis, or do you just sell three projects or whatever it might be? I would say that the way this works for me is I would do an opportunity analysis for the full set of projects and sell them on the core four with a view to doing the big four at another stage.
Right. Yeah.
Two-step selling, because once the four projects start kicking in and bringing in money, you don't even have to sell them on the big four because you've got credibility with the core four, because the big four is going to cost them more money than the core four, because you've got media, you've got PR, you've got direct mail, you've got things like that. That's going to cost them a little bit more to set up. I found anyway, once that you've got the core four done and it's hitting their bottom line, they're seeing more sales, they're seeing more profit. Once it comes to you talking to your client about doing the big four, they're not even going to blink. They're just going to say, look, just do it.
Okay, that's great. Richard, I forgot to address for you, what do you do when you handle a company that could be two or three companies within one? How do you structure the fees, or how would you recommend HMA consultants handle that?
I think Dave and Sam handled that really well, and it's what I've done, and that is let the client take you where he wants you to go. Don't get hung up. Just address the areas of need and pain and where the CEO wants you to go, and I have done both. I've worked with a client that all divisions were covered in the agreement. I've worked with clients where just one of the divisions has been covered.
Okay, and one more thing I think it'd be fun to do is, Sam, when you go back on that second appointment and you make your proposal, and Dave, when you're at the end of your hour, hour and a half opportunity analysis, and Richard, the same, when you're pitching in front of maybe an MEP, give me some closing statements. Anything that you like to use as far as a closing question? Dave, let's start with you because you mentioned it. At the end of that opportunity analysis, what was it that you said?
I come to the end of the project and I say, do you understand the system? Do you understand the processes that I go through? Do you have any questions? They'll either say yes or no. If they say yes, I'll say, where is it? What is it? And I won't go any further than the questions asked and answered. Then I reiterate, I tie down, do you have any more questions? Do you understand what I'm saying? Did I answer that to your satisfaction? If they say yes, I'll say, well, what do you think the next step should be? I don't sell them. I don't say, well, listen, I'm available whenever it might be. I say, what do you think the next step should be? And 9 times out of 10, what they're going to ask you then is, well, how much do you cost? Then you go into your cost structure, how you're paid project by project, and then you say again, based on that and based on what we've spoken about there, what do you think the next step should be? And they'll say, well, Dave, when can you start, or whatever they might say. But you keep asking the question. You keep asking the question. You never force your opinion on them. That's what works for me. What I love about the HMA system is that it's very flexible to a person's own style. It's not rigid. But that's the way I close. I'm very big on educating the client. I keep saying that every time I'm on one of these teleconferences. Educate the client, educate the client. Answer questions and ask questions. Open-ended questions, close-ended questions. Things that will bring out a situation where you get to the end of your opportunity analysis and they say no. That's what you don't want. You want to leave them in a situation where they absolutely cannot say no. And the only thing that will do that for me, for my style, is ask questions, answer questions, ask questions.
Sam, how about you? When you go back in with your proposal, how do you close?
The analysis I've done between the first meeting and the second meeting is very quantifiable. How many modules it's going to take, what my fee is going to be, what the starting point is for the measurement of the sales growth. And you got to have that. Like right now, I'd be going back to year ending 2006. But you got to be very specific. And in my proposal, I say I'm going to grow you 25% from your year ending annual sales volume as of December 31st, 2006. So I'm very specific. The modules are outlined in there. And the other point that I don't hear from a lot of people is the guarantee part. I do guarantee it. I guarantee it in writing that I'm going to achieve this with my client base. So the guarantee portion is the wrap-up, and I explained how I can guarantee it because of the strength of the three growth elements that you have in this system gives you such a latitude to be able to achieve the growth that I don't have any trouble guaranteeing what I'm doing. So the guarantee is the close and the wrap-up, and really has been very successful with me.
All right. You show them the guarantee, and then do you say anything?
I take them through the proposal book that I have there that tells them what modules I have selected. I say specifically what each module is going to do. Then I give them the financial starting point and the growth target, and then at the end is the guarantee portion of it. So I'm at the end of the presentation for the close when the guarantee portion of it comes in, and when you slap them with a guarantee for this type of growth, that's the closer for me.
Okay, and Richard, how about yourself?
I'm kind of a mix in the two there. I take them through an opportunity analysis because the reason that was developed was to ask enough questions that Dave makes a strong point about. And so as long as it is, and as detailed as it is for that reason, to make sure that we've answered all the questions, if I've done that well, I assume the sale. And so I book the next step, which is to meet together with everyone and start the USP. So I'll say something like, well, it looks like this is something that's going to be helpful for you. Let's go ahead and just schedule the first session where we meet together and start discussing the unique selling proposition. I can do that next Tuesday or Wednesday. We could do it in the morning, or we could do it after work. We could bring pizza. Why don't we just go ahead and get that scheduled?
Okay, so you do the assumptive sale.
That's right.
Okay, very good. I want each one of you to specifically state what you would tell the client your guarantee is, and maybe there'll be some subtle differences that the HMA consultants can use or borrow or modify. So, Dave, what's your guarantee when you're approaching a client? How do you word it to them?
Well, my guarantee is based in my USP as well. It's grow your business 20% in 20 days, or between 25% and 100% or more in 60 to 90 days, guaranteed. And my guarantee is that if I don't do that, I don't get paid. Simple as that.
All right, Richard, how do you word your guarantee to the client?
The guarantee is that we will achieve incremental growth and new sales that will cover the fee they pay me, or I'll keep working with them until they're satisfied it is. I've not guaranteed a specific measurement of percent or numbers.
Okay. And Sam?
Well, it's basically the same as Richard, although I put a time fence on it. I say that I will be at or above the specified growth target as defined in my proposal here within 12 months following implementation of all modules defined within this proposal, or I'll continue to work for you free until my fee is covered.
Very good. Okay, back to Dave. Dave, we have gone back and forth about you playing around with a preliminary first step that can get your clients excited and some very quick growth just to keep them motivated. Can we talk about your idea on that and share it with the other HMA Consultants.
Sure, no problem. It's based on my MBA thesis. My MBA thesis was based on the profit equation. It's price multiplied by quantity sold minus fixed cost minus variable cost multiplied by quantity. So basically, it's a cost reduction step. I beta tested it on one of my friend's businesses. I reduced his cost by, I think it was 9%, and we jumped his profit, his bottom line, to 54% in less than 30 days. That was just going in and reducing his overheads, reducing some of his fixed costs.
So if this is something you want to use with your clients, how would you integrate that into the HMA system?
If I was to use it, I probably will start using it. It would be my new project number one, mainly because it gives such a huge boost to the bottom line that the client is just overwhelmed. Obviously, because my USP is 20% in 20 days, it puts me under a little bit of pressure to get that done because I guarantee it. So what I'm looking for is quick dynamic growth, and this gives it to me over the first 30 days.
How do you implement that? Do you have it in steps? How would you go about implementing that, and how long would it take?
At the moment, it's 5 steps, but it needs a little bit of tinkering. So I've been working on it over last weekend, but I'm on crutches and painkillers, so I haven't been that active, to be honest. But what I'm trying to do is get it down to 4 steps, just like the rest of the projects. The only thing that it really takes, the only skills that somebody would have to learn, no more than direct mail, where copywriting would be a skill that you'd have to learn. You would have to have some notion of negotiation skills, because you will be talking to the suppliers. The second thing you would need to know is knowledge of the marketplace, as in alternate suppliers. But the internet is great for helping with that. And of course, the client can help you, because he's in the business, and I'm sure he knows alternate suppliers.
How about staff? Do you address firing?
Firing? No. My whole ethos is to reduce costs without getting rid of people.
Okay.
But staff, just like project one, step one, where you have a business owner and staff survey, you do the same in, I think it's the second step in my new project, step one.
You get ideas on how they could reduce costs.
Of course, because they're using the supplies. They know what's going on. They know what they're doing that's redundant.
Yeah. There's some lean manufacturing.
Yes. And it takes very little. In Stephen's business, we reduced costs by 9%, and it wasn't that hard. And I wasn't even trying, because I was with my own clients, well, my real clients. But I was basically testing this in his business for free. And, I mean, I spent something like maybe 3 days on the phone with suppliers negotiating. Simple things like, he was a prompt payer. He had a good relationship with his suppliers for about 3 years, and he wasn't getting a discount for prompt payment. So I negotiated a 3% discount for prompt payment. Payment in 10 to 15 days. So that's a reduction of 3% straight away.
You bet.
Sam, do you encounter cutting costs in your management consulting when you were starting out there? Was that something that you implemented as a step in a system doing management consulting, or even with your consulting clients?
Only as it relates to operational problems. I don't target cost reduction because I'm not that versed in their operations to begin with. But if during the survey process the employees indicate that there is a problem in terms of overhead costs, whatever type of cost it might be, then yes, I will address it in that manner, but not as a specific target for my activity as contained within any of the modules.
Well, certainly any of the HMA consultants can address that, and they could kind of skip over to the advertising step and kind of bring that towards the front and see what they're spending on advertising, because there's a good chance they're wasting money right there.
Yeah. The other idea is, some things I've done on a fast, quick basis is you'll find their fattest marketing asset, and it might be reactivate past clients, and there you can have a 30-day return. You could offer a back-end product to their customer base. That could be a 30-day return. You could train salespeople and put in a follow-up system. That could be a 30-day return. So there are some marketing components that could be really fast.
Oh, definitely.
So his point is that you could go both. You could go to a cost reduction, or you could go to any one of those and just explain that, well, it looks like we really need to get going quickly here. I'm going to even move forward into a little part of step three, and we're going to do a letter to past customers.
Sam, you told me you would be willing to offer any of the HMA consultants some outside, you know, working with you one-on-one. Can you describe what you'd be willing to do and a fee that you'd be willing to charge?
The thing that I've learned in consulting is you only have two things to offer. It's your time and your talent. And you got to be efficient in utilization of both of those, or you're not going to maximize your income. So what I've seen in Richard's system is that modules 1, 2, 3 are very systematic. Very, very systematic. They're step by step. And in implementing these steps over the years, I've developed tools that aid me in accomplishing that implementation. And these tools are available to those of you who would like to have services to help support your business in terms of getting off the ground and getting the growth that you need out of that. I do charge $100 an hour to do teleconsulting. I've had several teleconsulting clients, Canada, South Carolina, North Carolina, all over the country, and it's worked out very well. And I want to say I'm very conservative in my billing, too. So if you need some help and I can be of any assistance to you at all, please don't hesitate to contact me. My email address is all small case, no spaces, Sam Bowman, S-A-M-B-O-W-M-A-N, numeric1@CS, which stands for CompuServe.com. And my office phone number is area code 615-826-9383. Don't hesitate to call me at any time. If I'm not in, voicemail will pick it up, and I'll be certain to return the call.
All right, very good. Well, Sam, you've been very generous with your time. Richard, you as always, and Dave, and Gary Carter, and Rob, really, I hope this has been helpful. We covered a lot of material here. We got a lot of meat. I will edit this, and I will have this up at the HMA University for you to re-listen to. I'll have it transcribed word for word, so you can download those transcripts, and I'll have it in MP3 format as well. So I appreciate everyone, and wish everyone much continued success, and we'll plan another conference call probably within about 3 or 4 weeks. One other quick thing, Richard, the internet step, how far away are we from having that printed for the group manual?
I'm getting the cover done, and so we're just days away.
Okay, very good.
I'll get you a copy of that, Michael, and you can get those out too if you want to.
All right, Richard and then Sam, any one last words of encouragement to the new and existing HMA consultants?
Just getting more and more exciting, guys. It's a great time to be out doing it, so keep it up. Be persistent.
Yes, and recognize also that you have a more opportunistic client base as recessions approach. So you may have a better opportunity in the near future. But seriously, I wish you success, and if I could help you in any way, please don't hesitate to call me.
All right, very good. Well, thanks, everybody. I'm going to officially end the call, and if anyone has anything, just email me.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye, guys.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. That's the end of this March 14th conference call with Richard and Sam Bowman and other consultants from around the world. I hope this has been helpful, and please check back to the HMA University often for more updated calls. Thanks for listening.